First panel will be moderated by Altaz Valani, who's Director of Research at Security Compass. Altaz manages the overall research vision and team at Security Compass and conducts ongoing research in the software security domain. He is on the Safecode Technical Leadership Council, the CIO Strategy Council, and several IEEE working groups where cybersecurity and privacy challenges are being tabled at the international standards level. So welcome, Altaz. And the panelists today, we have Malou Septien-Milan, President of Cryptopon. Malou brings more than 25 years of industry expertise in government, high-tech manufacturing, retail, and executive digital solutions, advisory, and general management across every functional vertical. Malou heads a neuroscience therapeutic startup based on building an automated platform that improves brain functioning. Her prior roles include executive management for Motorola, NASA, PepsiCo, Microsoft, Capgemini, and Kratos Advisory. Welcome, Malou. Glenn Knopman, Associate Partner at CityHub Consulting. Glenn is an IT consultant and leader with a demonstrated ability to provide compelling and practical advice to IT professionals responsible for the success of their firm's IT organization. He's an experienced program manager, combining common sense and practical solutions with ITSM, NIST, ISO, and COVID practices to deliver mission-critical programs. So welcome, Glenn. And last but by no means least, Andy Woisbun, management consultant with Woisbun Advisory. Andy has over 51 years of experience in various technical management and executive IT roles. He's worked in a broad variety of industries, including computer services, government, consulting services, financial services, and telecommunications. So that is our panel, and I'm going to hand over to the moderator, Altaz, but a warm welcome from the open group to all of you.
Well, thank you very much, Steve, and thanks everybody for attending this session today. Let's just dive right in. I know we have so much that we can talk about here, but within the context of security in the digital-first enterprise, let me start with you, Andy. You've been a CIO multiple times. What is your perspective on a CIO's response to security and the enablement of digital?
Well, I think one of the challenges for many CIOs is that there's relatively limited interest or involvement by board level or even at senior executive level in the whole area of security. That's part of the challenge, how to increase that degree of participation, involvement, and funding. The other is the degree to which IT itself or the IT organization really understands how to apply corrective action when certain risks have been identified. So it's not enough just to present to the board the risks and the impact of the risks. You have to be able to actually deliver preventative action in a credible way if you're going to be successful.
Yeah, that's interesting. We're moving away from being just reactive, but also looking at building in proactivity. And we'll get to more of that later. Glenn, let me ask you a question. You've got a strong background in ITIL. What do you suggest in bringing a service orientation mindset when it comes to security enablement of digital?
Well, you look at the NIST model that they're using now, it cuts right across the entire IT stack. So you can't be a team off to one side doing security. It's too small. You've got to really leverage, you know, the whole concept of ITIL and process and service changes. You're delivering value throughout. A security team needs to think about that value chain and identify where the controls need to be put in place so that everybody's working towards, you know, keeping the environment safe and protected instead of just making it one team's discrete job over in the corner. Otherwise, the economies of scale are too big and you'll never catch up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. It now becomes not just technical teams, but we've got other business teams starting to talk about security, and therein lies part of the challenge is how do we get these teams to now effectively collaborate and talk to each other. And I know that earlier even this year when I was over at RSA, a similar theme was emerging. It's not just about risk and just about speed, but it's both is kind of what we need. And with that in mind, let me just turn over to you, Malu, with your background working with some of the biggest companies globally. What challenges are you seeing around security and digital? Are you there, Malu?
Okay, Altaz, I suggest you maybe direct the questions to other folk while Malu sorts out her audio problems.
Thank you. So just moving on, when we take a look at, Andy, you kind of opened this up for us and you were describing how many times it's about overcoming a no and trying to move it into a yes. How do you get from a no to a yes and at the same time show that you're providing value to the business? This is really important. It's all about business enablement. Yes, we've got a risk component to this as well, but can you talk a little bit from your experience about how you go from no to yes?
Sure. I think that one of the things that you have to remember if you're dealing, especially even with a privately held company, a small organization, you really have a very limited amount of energy that you can expend on convincing senior management to support or to emphasize security or risk reduction. So you have to be very, very focused on things that are going to really be seen as impacting the organization. Part of the problem with some of the detail analysis that we just saw in the previous presentations is that that's all good, but if you only have a few minutes to convince a board committee or the CEO or the owner of your company that you have a problem, you have to be very, very focused and you have to understand what it is that is important to the listeners. The second thing is that you need to have a credible plan to address that. The fact that you have a risk doesn't necessarily mean that you have an acceptable plan. You have to have both. And the third thing that you have to have is that you have to have some credibility around the fact that you can actually execute the plan. And this isn't just around security, of course, but in general, focus on the things that are clearly important to the audience. Have a credible plan. And thirdly, demonstrate how your organization can actually execute that plan.
That's key. And, Glenn, you talked a little bit about a service orientation. And when we start to dig down a little bit deeper on service orientation, we're typically looking at somehow supporting and providing as best we can automated capabilities, but also at the same time providing a service wherein the team that is responsible for that service can provide some kind of output to particular stakeholders. And I think one of the things that I've observed is the shift towards the data and the reporting. And just looking at that at this point, can you talk, Glenn, a little bit about data governance and what you're seeing in the evolution of going digital?
Oh, wow. That's a big topic. We have, 20 minutes? I'll take it this way. A lot of the practices you're putting in place for data governance or for security is basic hygiene and information technology and in the infrastructure teams. Even in the, it's app. It's not DevOps. It's DevSecOps. And when you're moving to Agile, when you're building in this capability, one of the things I see with awareness campaigns is people now know what to do in case of privacy or malware or, if I click on the wrong link, what to do, but they don't see their personal responsibility. So as an organization, they say, oh, yeah, we need to recover to that or react to that. Individuals have to know what's my job if something happens. And so the data governance piece, it's the same thing. Data is not one massive pool. Every team's got capability based on technology, experience, function and how it's used by the customer or the client. And they have to be aware of those guideposts. So security, I use the NIST three-level model. L1 are the frontline people. If you're going to do data governance, the security team has to teach those people okay, these are the things you have to be aware of, and these are the things you have to watch for. And when you see something, you get the L2 team involved so they can come in and give you some assessments, some guidance. So what I'm seeing more and more is making those teams that are aware of it. I mean, when an application owner doesn't know where their data is used or where it's stored, and they rely on a DBA, and the DBA is like, well, you know, isn't quite aware of the backup because the way the backups are done, where it's at rest, where it's in transit, you've got gaps and issues. So when you start to make them aware, look, you own that, and here's the responsibility and the hygiene we need you to manage. And when I talk about hygiene, it's the basic care and feeding, so that the data and the systems and the tools are all protected. And otherwise, you've got people, you know, chain is strong as its weakest link. And if people don't know where they fit in the chain, you run into gaps and problems.
Mm-hmm. So let me, I think, Malou, your mic is on at this point. Let me throw a question your way then. You know, we heard earlier about the need of creating like a bill of materials or, you know, something that would provide some idea of what's inside a particular piece of software. Now, I'm going to extend that concept a little bit and talk about security from a digital enablement standpoint. What type of manifest exists for security? Have you seen anything like that? Do you have any thoughts or experiences that you'd like to share with us?
Well, sure. Can you hear me okay?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, good. So, you know, when you look at an end-to-end architecture, it's important to not forget the foundations of architecture. And there are two frameworks, really, that have served me very well over the years. One is Zachman, and the other one is TOGAF. And to speak about the simpler one, TOGAF is all about what we call the BOAST, right? The business imperatives and enablement, the operational processes, and that's end-to-end. So if you're in the business of shipping product or manufacturing or servicing a supply chain, is look at your end-to-end processes. Then when we talk about systems, it's all the pieces of the system, okay? And so all the applications, all the data, all the networks, and then all the technology foundations supporting those. So in the context of that framework, one thing that's very useful is to map where those end-to-end processes lie, because in a digital-first world, you still have what I call the scattering of components across, you know, infrastructure as a service, software as a service, platform as a service, homegrown development, and then from there, you know, map where you're getting those all those bits and bytes, right? So it's the integration of not just the end-to-end processes that support those business imperatives, but all of the systems components and all the technical components by which you then have to assess risk and, of course, implement the appropriate security measures in context of the amount of risk you're willing to take.
Mm-hmm. So I think we've got time perhaps for one more question, and I'd like to throw this as an open question to each one of you. You know, we talk about digital enablement, we talk about security. Do you have any examples of an organization that has pulled this off?
I can say yes. Yes. It's complex, but I would say, you know, when I worked at Microsoft as general manager of quality in business and operational excellence, we had to solve problems in context of a business outcome. And so the ability to pull that off, I'll give you a perfect example, was Skype for Business or even Windows 10. It really helped us pivot the way we looked at cybersecurity. And it was through the lens of cybersecurity that we solved performance problems, and we ultimately digitized a Windows 10 platform that could, for the first time in history, tell you, because we're now looking at the end-to-end process, it's not just about, you know, giving you a license, it's about subscribing to a service that, oh, by the way, knows where that key is enabled in every single device. So the piracy problems that we had in the past really became a lot less of an issue than had we not implemented it in such a manner. That's just a couple of examples. Yeah.
Great.
There's three thoughts in my head, and so let me get at them. First off, a lot of companies are safe because they think they're too small, so they're not going to get bothered, and that's a risk because the hackers are out there and they're always probing. And one of the things we're seeing in the industry is they're aiming at small to medium-sized companies because the protection's not as good. So that's the first thought. So don't think that just because you're small, you're safe. The biggest thing saving you is there's a million things out there and you're one of a million. The second thing is financial verticals, government, places I've worked with are all doing it well to some extent. That's why they're not in the newspapers all the time. So you've got to think about the hackers aren't kids banging in the basement. It's big business and organized crime. They're always probing every piece of your service chain to find where the weak links are. So you've got to, as security teams, got to be, diligent and make sure that the compliance requirements and the rules and the controls are out there and in use every day by the teams. And the third thing is to make the business pay attention is never let any event go unmined for opportunity. So when Twitter has an insider that hacks and releases all kinds of privileged information, you go talk to the board about that could happen here, you need to put controls in place. And every day there's something put out by, the SANS Storm Center where you can actually say, these things are happening out here. So it's pervasive. The bad guys are well-equipped and security teams need to be on point to make it happen. Mm-hmm. Lots of places do it well. So I can't tell you specifics because of NDAs, all kinds of things. The problem is one slip and they're through. And that's the headache. So.
And final thoughts, Andy, from your side?
I think that to Glenn's point about whether you're vulnerable or not, just because you're big or just because you're small, I think that organizations that think through their true vulnerabilities are in fact investing in appropriate detection and prevention or remediation approaches. So I think the key element here, whether you're big, whether you're small, is really to understand what is it that you have in terms of data or information that is of interest to organized government or organized crime. And that can be an important way of setting priority, is just putting yourself in the mindset of your opposition and where is it that they're likely to want to probe, and that's where you need to put your energy.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Wonderful. Thank you very much. Well, there are still lots and lots of questions, but it looks like we've come up against our time here. So I guess, Steve, I'll hand it over to you at this point if you want to moderate any Q&A, or I can certainly take that, whatever works for you. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you all. Altaz, thank you for moderating, and Malu, Glenn, and Andy for your participation and your insights. I just have one question I have to ask, because this is an open group event, and Malu, you talked about TOGAF. Being a framework that had been had helped you and been reliable over several years, and you talked about BOAST. Can you say a little more about what BOAST stands for?
Sure. If you think of four layers, business is the B.
Mm-hmm.
Operations, where your business processes lie, is the O. S is systems, and then T is technology. And so if you think of a V model of testing, for example, or a V model for risk management, if you follow those four layers, that's how BOAST comes to life. If you think of only each letter independently within each swim lane, you will be missing the bigger picture.
Right. That's wonderful. Thanks for that, for expanding on that, because I know there'll be a lot of people who are familiar with TOGAF who might find that helpful. So thank you for that. And thank you to each of you for participating. And we will move on to our next panel, but a very big virtual round of applause for you all. Thank you.